Annabess is the director of Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait, a prematurity prevention program at the March of Dimes. She's guiding the program in Kentucky as it's transitioning from a demonstration project of the March of Dimes to an ongoing long-term partnership and program intervention throughout the state. She provides direction to Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait pilots in Texas and in New Jersey. And Annabess Brown is a graduate of the University of North Carolina School of Public Health in Chapel Hill. Please join me in welcoming Annabess Brown. Hi. It's really great to be here and talk about Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait. I have no relationships to disclose. I wanted to start with a quotation by Marianne Williamson. In every community, there is work to be done. In every nation, there are wounds to heal. In every heart, there's a power to do it. So that's what we believe at March of Dimes, that there is the will to make these changes and make birth outcomes better. So Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait is a chapter-led community program aimed at reducing preterm birth. It includes and is foundational to the program are the partnerships between the March of Dimes, the health department, the hospital, and the community. It involves clinical interventions, provider and patient education, and community awareness, and also has a component of evaluation. The background was a demonstration project in Kentucky which occurred 2007 to 2009. It was a multifaceted real-world ecological design that used evidence-based clinical and public health interventions to prevent preterm birth. And the goal was to reduce preterm birth by 15% in three communities in Kentucky. Clarence Clemens said that being involved in the well-being and advancement of one's own community is the most natural thing to do. So we have this mnemonic with Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait program, the five P's to help you remember the different elements. Partnerships and collaborations, as I said, are really foundational, really, really important. Provider initiatives, we train providers in this program. Patient support is very important. Public engagement, that is the community education piece, which might be a little different than maybe some interventions to reduce poor birth outcomes that you've heard of before, but it really does involve educating the community as well, and measuring progress or evaluation. So those are the five P's, and you'll hear those reflected as we go through. So thinking about our theme of community at APHA this year and for this session, I wanted to think about ways that community is integral to this program, and really it really is so important every step of the way. Instead of going into a community and saying, here is this program that we think will work for you, you know, we go in and say, you know, where's the will to change this, to help prevent prematurity? And we pull people together in from statewide leadership, community leadership, and from the community itself, you know, women in the community. Assess whether the community is ready, you know, is there that leadership there, and are people willing and ready to take action? Doing the community assessment in the beginning is really important. What are the problems with preterm birth? What are the trends? How do we begin to get the hospital and health department together and start looking at, you know, what are our resources, and do we know about those, and how do we let women know about them and get them into care? All the way through with implementation, of course, the community is important to get those interventions done. There are places for perinatal professionals to contribute, for state partners to have roles. You can have them on your advisory board. Each community program has an advisory board that helps direct interventions and keep the community talking and learning. And then, of course, each one of these bullets, I have to tell you, was a whole slide. I had to cut way back. Well, you know how it is when you're trying to cram everything into 15 minutes. So we learned many lessons from the demonstration project in Kentucky. We're still learning. One very important lesson was to get your hospital communications department on board early on, because this is a great thing for them. And I noticed when Sharon Rising talked about
great marketing for
a centering program. I wrote that down. I'm like, ooh, we can say that about healthy babies and birth weight too. Because it is a great thing for the community and for the hospital to be able to say we have better birth outcomes because our community is pulling together around this program. So I wanted to give you a few examples of collaborations. And this is from our demonstration project in Kentucky. King's Daughters Medical Center is in rural eastern Kentucky near the West Virginia line. And at King's Daughters, they were finding out that they really were not getting as many women referred for services early on in their pregnancy. So they, with a March of Dimes grant, hired a social worker who provided screening and referral for high-risk prenatal patients. And so this really required communication between the health department and the community organizations and between the hospital and the physician practices. So really getting people, you know, to talk to each other and communicate, figure out what services are there, figure out what the gaps in services are and get women, people to communicate about that really provides better services for women all the way through. Another example is at Trover Health System, which is in eastern Kentucky, and their partner, Hopkins County Health Department, where they invited the WIC coordinator from the health department to come to their first centering pregnancy group. They have a great centering program at Trover, and they thought women are not taking advantage of health department services that are available, so how do we let women know about those and help them feel welcome? So they invited the WIC coordinator to come and talk about nutrition, and at that time she could talk about all the other health department services. They also developed a fax referral system that helped get more referrals and helped everybody learn about what services were available and linked patients with health department services. Co-location of services is another benefit that came out of the demonstration project, which is still going on, actually. These things that kind of were a result of the Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait program, you know, continue today. At UK, the University of Kentucky, and Lexington Fayette County Health Department, the health department nurse worked out of the UK clinic 2 days a week, and the UK nurse worked out of the health department 2 days a week so that they could, you know, provide different kinds of education, get women who didn't have a provider into care. So it was just a great mutually beneficial trade-off. Another example from Trover is that the health department had a wonderful new dental clinic, and Trover was referring women from centering to the dental clinic, and they weren't going. So the health department brought in a dentist and a dental hygienist on site to do screening 3 days a week. So really great collaboration and services provided. So I just have to say that Trover, which I've talked about a couple of times, you can tell one of our shining stars in Kentucky, just recently found out that they won an NCH Epi Award for effective practice on the community level. They are, as you know, doing Healthy Babies Worth the Wait and Centering Pregnancy, and a special form of centering pregnancy smiles, which has a dental care component. They've reduced elective deliveries, they've seen fewer preterm births, and they've improved outcomes. So we're very happy for them. They're going to New Orleans next month to accept their award. No, actually December. So just a brief mention of community engagement, community education, and Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait. We want to let communities know that while that really intense, overwhelming experience of having a baby in the NICU is, you know, and really compelling for that family, that the consequences for the community, you know, go on to impact school systems, employers, insurance. You know, it's a bigger problem, and we want to make it a priority. So I want to draw your attention to prematurityprevention.org, which is the March of Dimes Prematurity Prevention Resource Center. And there's a lot of information on that website, and you'll hear more about that website. Some other resources for Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait. There's an implementation manual posted on the PPRC, that prematurityprevention.org website. There's a toolkit for conducting community education with slides and handouts and information. There are materials such as brochures and posters, and the March of Dimes provides technical assistance for the program as well. Here are a couple of examples of our materials that we use with Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait program. Why the Last Weeks of Pregnancy Count in English and Spanish, and also the Brain Card, which talks about brain development in those last important weeks of pregnancy. So I wanted to give you a quick update on where we are in Kentucky, New Jersey, and Texas rolling out Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait. We have 8 sites now in Kentucky. We started with 3 intervention and 3 control sites in the demonstration project. Last year brought on the control sites and added another site, and then added another site this year. A site is a health department and hospital and community. In New Jersey, the focus is on taking Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait and seeing how it works and developing new materials to address disparities in the African American community. So our focus is on Newark, where we have 2 hospitals participating, and the launch will be early next year, February. And Johnson & Johnson helped fund the work in Kentucky and is also has promised us a grant for New Jersey, which we're very grateful for. In Texas, the steering committee chose Houston as the first area where we'll focus our program. We have 3 hospitals on board, and the formal launch will be in January, with actually the soft launch for the hospitals happening this week, so we're very excited. So if you'd like to learn more about prematurity prevention programs, I'd love to invite you to the March of Dimes Prematurity Symposium, which is happening here in D.C. in January, the 19th and 20th. It is a time for sharing your ideas and your programs, so we'd really love for you to come and take part. If you'd like to submit an abstract, you could let us know what you would like to present. There's a form online at marchofdimes.com/symposium where you can get the form to submit an abstract. We'd love to have you join us. So I'll close with a quotation by Everett Dirksen. When all is said and done, the real citadel of strength in any community is in the hearts and minds and desires of those who dwell there. So there's my contact information if you want to talk about Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait coming to your community. Any questions? Yes?
You're a wonderful speaker, by the way.
Thank you.
I was wondering what kind of receptiveness you're getting amongst obstetrical care providers in the communities where you're going, because so much of whether or not elective deliveries are occurring has to do with attitudes around practice. And it seems that without buy-in from obstetrical providers, this isn't going to get very far, because they really have to help change the culture of what is acceptable and what is not in obstetrical care. And I was wondering what your experience was.
I was just talking with our partners in Kentucky last week at the National Perinatal Association meeting, which happened in Louisville. So we had a great opportunity to get our Kentucky sites together there in their home state. And they said, oh, that first year was so hard. And I think, reflecting, kind of your question there, community readiness, which I mentioned, is so important. You definitely want to have a community that's open to this. Having a provider champion at the hospital is so, so important too, and the hospital administration, because you can have one champion, but if the administration's not on board, or if you don't have that whole community support, you can be fighting an uphill battle. So great point. I think there is a movement across the country now with many perinatal quality collaboratives forming, and a lot of states having achieved great success and sharing with other states how to do that by policy change, by looking at ACOG guidelines and adhering to those. So Dr. Ashton may have something to add to that, or maybe Judy. Do you want to add to that, Dr. Ashton?
I was involved in the demonstration project in Kentucky, and we knew it would be an uphill battle in terms of changing culture of obstetrician practices, and we purposefully did not focus on elective deliveries during the first year or two, just to be able to educate providers about the issues around preterm birth and educate them about the process, about thinking of implementing quality improvement programs, because it takes a lot of resources and a lot of organizing to really get the administration and the hospitals together. And one of the products that was developed from March of Dimes is a toolkit, which provides very detailed information about how to go about setting it up, how to present the information to the providers within the hospitals. So it is a process, and it does take significant culture change, and it occurs slowly. But I think it was very successful. And there were definite outcomes in terms of these hospitals looking at individual provider practices, bringing in consultants from outside to review their hospital outcomes and make recommendations on how to improve their outcome and decrease their cesarean section rate. So it was ultimately very successful.
That wasn't standing up to answer the question, but rather to thank our panelists and open the questions, open this time for questions for any of the panelists. So,
you didn't mention any outcomes from the Kentucky Project. In other words, did you find a reduction in premature rates?
We did.
We're actually busy analyzing that information, but yes, we did achieve, after our multiple regression analysis, a 15% decrease in preterm birth rates. But you also have to keep that in mind that nationwide we were seeing decreases in preterm birth rates, so it's really hard to tease out what the impact of healthy babies might have been individually, but we're very confident that we believe we made an impact there.
Were those late preterm births or early preterm births?
Well, the majority of preterm births that drive the rates are late preterm births, so yes. Question?
Yes. You put forward the life course perspective, stating that interventions during pregnancy may not be sufficient, they may be too late to really affect outcomes, yet the centering program occurs during pregnancy and it has really great outcomes. And there's another program, the sister friend program, and others that provide social support during pregnancy as sort of their main intervention and improve the outcome. So how do you balance this approach of the life course being important and yet still these pregnancy interventions can be very effective?
Mm-hmm. It is a challenge. And while providing interventions during pregnancy is, you know, really limiting in terms of the potential for addressing many of the disparities that we see in birth outcomes, it's going to take a significant culture change. When we look at health practices and services, it's very clinically focused. But, you know, if you want to make a change along the health course, you really need to look at the social environment and what those dynamics are. And it's a process that actually Healthy People 2020 are promoting, where looking at health impact assessments to see how changes in policies in the community and around issues such as toxic exposures, pollution, job opportunities can impact health. So it is an evolving process, and I think that there is a focus more towards looking towards the community to address problems of health and health outcomes rather than just focusing on them in the hospital.
Thank you. I just want to give Sharon a chance to address that question as well, so from the centering patients who are referring also to centering pregnancy. And I know that you also are looking at health across the life cycle, so it's not that part is not not lost on Centering Healthcare Institute.
Right.
Why don't we need to? Is it Mike Dugan?
So one of the additional things that I was thinking of is also we're very invested in centering parenting, and one of the reasons for that is it's well woman care. As you know, we have no system in this country for well woman care. At sort of the 6-week visit, if we're fortunate enough to have that with a woman, it's often we wish you well. And it's really a no person's land, as we know, there between delivery and who do I talk to and where do I get support for breastfeeding and for myself, depression screening, et cetera. So thinking of that first postpartum year has been another place of attention for us. And I think this is the time for a woman to set and try to achieve her weight goals. We think of what happens for many women as weight isn't lost and it accumulates, and we're so worried about diabetes. Depression screening, in places that are doing regular depression screening, they're finding depression at the high 30s or 40% level in that first postpartum year. Having support for ongoing contraception, support for breastfeeding, attention to issues of family violence. I mean, these are all issues that occur during this first postpartum year, along with the attachment and the hopefully successful growth and development of the baby. So we're really, as we look at centering parenting, it's a dyad model. I mean, I really believe that it's important for pediatricians, for example, having lots of discussions with pediatricians these days, pediatricians and anybody doing family medicine, family practice, to be thinking family, to be thinking dyad. So again, another piece of that, and then we're also looking at the preconception period. So preconception, interconception, how to enter pregnancy in a healthier state. But we know that if we can expand that interconception period, that also is going to be a positive towards reducing preterm birth.
Thank you. Another question? Yes.
For the centering program, I just wanted to know where I could find some resources as far as guides to, how to start with the program.
So our website is pretty instructive. It's centeringhealthcare.org. We want sites to start with a readiness survey, because one of the things that we've learned by watching programs and models have success or not is that the system has to be ready. And I think some of my colleagues here also referred to that there needs to be acceptance from the top administrator, the medical director, the nursing director, and there needs to be a champion. That word was used earlier as well. And so this is a self-take survey that sites can do. It's on our website. And if they score low, there are some things we need to do. Maybe we're really not ready to do this. And if they score really well on that, and contact us, and then we have a 2-year engagement that we have with sites that really starts with that starts with system redesign and what you need to do to get ready for groups, then that has training and follow-up with ongoing consultation, and then eventually site approval for model fidelity. And we're moving towards the ability to have really large data sets, so we would like to have our sites have the 13 elements in place and have a successful, sustainable program. It's too much work to try to change the paradigm. We're not talking pilot anymore. We're talking about system change.
Have you had sites in the centering pregnancy actually remodel? Because most of the provider locations in our town also have individual business, and the only place left is the employee lunchroom. It's of any size, and it's not very big. So
right.
I was just looking at that room you were using.
So space is a big issue, and what you don't want to do is take over the employee lunchroom, because then what's the staff going to say? Oh, let's get rid of this program. So yes, we have had a number of sites that are remodeled. Centering is process-driven, not content-driven, and it's interactive. So if you think about where do we usually have space in our agencies, it's a conference room with like a 500-pound table in the middle. Doesn't work. That is one of the issues, and sometimes you walk the community, which is what I did in one of my sites. I just didn't have a good space, and I really walked the community. Where else is there a really good place? But it's care, so always remembering that it's care, and it has to fulfill those requirements. But there has been remodeling, and I think part of the question is, do you start before you have the right kind of space, or do you wait to have the right kind of space? Because if you have space that will only accommodate, let's say, six pregnant women, it's never going to be sustainable because it's not productive. And you need to have the right kind of space.
Other questions? Sorry, just one minute.
Yes. Looking at your marketing centering, one of the issues we're encountering in our community is a lot of women in very low-paying jobs where any time off work becomes a real issue. And I'm hearing prescribed time with very limited, it's 2 hours and you're in and out. Have you found that businesses,
I think it really has been a good marketing approach. When you think about 2 hours, you think, oh, that's a lot of time. And then you look at between the waiting room and the checking in and then the very quick visit and then waiting to check out and never knowing. I mean, we do that too, right? When we go in to a clinician for care, we don't know when we're going to get in and out. I mean, it's just the nature of the system. So having set times and also having alternative times. So some of the best programs have been from models have been from 6 to 8 in the evening or 5:30 to 7:30. Some places are doing Saturday mornings. So looking at what would work in my community is another, I think, really important thing. When I first started, I did a survey with mothers coming and said, when is the best time for you to come? How do you get here? When do the buses run? You know, sort of looking at the bigger picture of what would really work in terms of time. But I think that's, thinking of employers saying, I can count on this, that's huge.
Prevention Resource Center at the March of Dimes, the Centering Pregnancy on the Centering Healthcare Institute's website, Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait information on the March of Dimes Prematurity Prevention Resource Center as well. So I just wanted to make sure you logged all of those things and that I invited you to the event this late afternoon before we go into any additional questions. Are there other questions here? I know we have one up front. Do you have your question answered?
No, it's for Dr. Ashley. My question is, in your research, have you found that there is one indicator that's driving disparity between black and white outcomes, or is it a combination of things in your research?
Most of my research has been in the literature. But as far as drivers, I would say what has really been examined very closely are the issue of racism. And whether the stresses and discriminatory practices associated with that are the real drivers for health disparities. Not only in terms of stress from interpersonal interactions, but the effect that it has on access to employment, on access to equal housing, on access to health care and circumstances in the community. So it, there are several issues that impact it, but I think most of the literature is going to put an emphasis on the issue around stress and racism.
Thank you. Well, please.